Hello and welcome to Along the Road, the podcast where we talk to a range of interesting and inspiring creators and other individuals to get an insight into their perspective and what they do and the lessons they learn along the way. In this episode, we're joined by Graham Alcott. Graham's the founder of Think Productive, one of the world's leading providers of personal productivity training and consultancy. They have offices around the world and have had clients like WWF, Boots, British Airways, BT, KFC and Sainsbury's. Graham's fascinated about the world of productivity and has written multiple books, including the global bestseller, How to Be a Productivity Ninja. He also hosts a business podcast called Beyond Busy, which dives deep into the subjects of productivity, work-life balance, and how people define happiness in their lives. This episode is kind of like a starting point in some of the key concepts in his Productivity Ninja book. We go over how time management has changed and why old time management techniques aren't as effective anymore. And we discuss one of the main points of the book, which is attention management. We also talk about its concept of the boss and worker mode and some tips on gaining clarity and reducing stress. And near the end of our conversation, we talk about Think Productive and the story of how the company came into existence. Oh, and also my cat featured in this episode.
You got a cute cat in the background there as well.
Oh, yeah. This is Nina's thing. I would say that Nina's not an extremely productive cat, kind of spends the day just walking around doing nothing, but...
So I really hope you enjoyed this episode. There are definitely some really valuable tips here. Enjoy. Graham, it's so awesome to be able to talk to you today. Thanks so much for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I've read two of your books, How to Be a Productivity Ninja and How to Be a Study Ninja. And I've been using your productivity model and techniques for like the past few months. And they've kind of just become like my default, you know. I really want to talk to you about that today, your productivity model and tips and tricks in the time we have. But first of all, you mentioned right at the start of How to Be a Productivity Ninja that time management is dead and that you'll never get everything finished. And this is something that you don't see everywhere. And it contrasts a lot to the type of productivity things you see online and everything. Now, in what way do you think time management has changed over the years?
So here's the thing. I think most of the well-known techniques around time management come from the well-known books, right? So 1 Minute Manager, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. They were all books that were written before we had 24/7 instant communication. And they were all books written in an age where communication arrived on your desk at the start of a working day. And then you create a list and you tick through it and then you finish it. And the kind of society that we're in now and the kind of work that we do, it's you've got your tasks to do, you've got your bigger projects to work on, but you're also in that treadmill of reacting to new information all the time, whether it's emails coming in, whether it's collaborations on Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Slack or whatever, and of course all the stuff that's on our phones as well. So we're kind of constantly in this age of potential distraction. And so what I say in Productivity Ninja is forget time management and just think about attention management. So how we manage our attention, how we allow the best energy that we have and the best hours in our day to be put towards the most difficult stuff. And basically, if you do that, then everything else sort of falls into place. So it's a slightly more subtle art to manage attention than it is to manage time. But the good news is, because not every hour in your day is equal, once you manage your really quality attention in a really good way, then use your willpower on that, and then the rest of it kind of falls into place.
So what is the difference between attention management and time management?
So like it's often said that time is our most precious resource, right? And you know, there's all these things that you'll see on Instagram about you have the same number of hours in your day as Barack Obama and all these kind of motivational mantras. But you know, ultimately the level of attention that we have to do our best work, what I say in Productivity Ninja is we have 2 to 3 hours of a day in our day of what we call proactive attention. So when we really feel switched on, able to do the most difficult stuff on our to-do list, 2 to 3 hours a day. So if you just focus on that and really get the best stuff done during those times, then what you can then do is you allow yourself a little bit more leeway in the rest of the time to be doing some of the more reacting kind of tasks, to maybe doing a bit more procrastination or scrolling, or you know, giving yourself a little bit more of a breathing space too. Because I think the other part of productivity, and you know, coming back to where you started with your first question about how has it changed over the years, is I think you know, humans have got more harsh with themselves around how we manage ourselves. So you know, part of the art of this is saying, when I have the best energy and attention, I want to be my own sergeant major. I want to be on my own back, being really strict with myself. And then the rest of the time, I actually want to be like my own counselor instead of my own sergeant major. I want to be much more kind to myself. I want to be much more able to, you know, maybe do some of the things that aren't so difficult and not beat myself up if in those hours where I'm a bit tired, I'm not achieving great things. I think we have to just look at every hour in our day as different. And, you know, ultimately what matters most is those 2 to 3 hours where we have our best attention.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of us fall into the trap of squeezing every single minute into getting as many things ticked off the list. And that only ends in disappointment because that will never happen. You'll never get an empty to-do list, but also like, yeah, it's frustrating to feel like, why am I, well, this morning, this task, I could do it, but why am I now struggling now? And it feels like you're failing at something, but actually it's not that. It's because when you've used up all your attention, it's just, it's difficult to carry on going, and you shouldn't. You should then, you know, take that time to do other things or rest or really use that efficiently.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's no such thing as a clean slate, right? So I think a lot of people, and I think one of the problems often in the school system is we're taught at school perfection, right? We're taught do it in this way, everything's marked, and we're sort of taught that the job in life is to kind of tick everything off. You could have a really productive day, and at the end of that day, you have more things on your to-do list than when you started, and yet you've had a really productive day because there's no clean slate. There's always new stuff coming in, and the world's constantly kind of shifting and changing. So, you know, it's about how you react to that, how agile you are, which is one of the ninja characteristics, agility, as well as how focused you are to really spend and apply your best attention to the best stuff.
I feel like that is one of the main ideas of Productivity Ninja is attention management rather than time management.
Yeah, so for sure. And tell me what that's looked like for you. So you've been using it for the last few months. I'd just love to hear what does that mean for you?
For me, it's kind of strange because I've also got to think about school because I go to school every day and the attention used up in school. But then after when I get home, it's like a, you know, a whole new to-do list of things to do.
Yeah,
so homework, right, yeah. And studying and, you know, personal projects like this podcast. So it's kind of balancing that. And I often actually, I don't know if this is good or not. It's actually, I'd be interested in, you know, what you've got to say about this, but I usually kind of consider it as two separate days. So I have my school day, then I get home and I have my kind of afternoon day to get all my to-do list stuff done because it's completely different kind of things that I'm doing. So that's kind of how I'm working on that. And then, yeah, doing the most difficult things first, the things that require the most attention and the things with the most resistance. So I enjoy weekends. You get a whole day and you can structure it how you want. And these are the things I'll be doing first. Whereas right now, after this interview and after a long day of school, I've got to do a couple hours of some biology revision for a test I have tomorrow, which is not ideal. So yeah, what is your kind of advice on that? Considering like, I consider it as kind of two separate days because of school and then and getting home and doing other things. So I don't know, because realistically, my attention would have already been kind of used up throughout the school day. So how should I kind of consider that?
Yeah, I guess that depends on what you're working on the side and, you know, where does that sit in your list of priorities compared to school? And that'll be different for anyone in a similar position to you. I mean, what I can say is that, you know, I really relate to what you're saying because I was definitely someone who I think I was all right at school. I mean, you'll see in the front of Study Ninja, actually, I put some of my old school reports.
Yeah.
And there was a period where I wasn't so good at school, but and so I sort of play on that a little bit at the start of the book and say, hey, like I was rubbish at school, but actually at the same time, I really loved learning as well. And I was in a grammar school. So it was like the school for people who passed the 11 plus test, you know, so I was in with the clever kids, but I was kind of medium in the clever kids. I wasn't like top of the class or anything. But I probably learned more that has impacted my life outside of the classroom as I did in the classroom. So you saying you're coming back and then you've got all these other things going on.
Well, a lot of them are schoolwork as well, homework and
yeah, things. But also you're doing radio shows and all this kind of stuff, which I mean, no one's making you do that. And I think there's something really important in all of that, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, I think just being able to get practical into stuff where you're not just learning the theory of stuff, but you're like making stuff actually happen and producing real shows, I think is a really big deal. And the second thing is, often when you start on those kind of projects, you get into positions of leadership and responsibility that you would not have if you were in a paid job, because you promote yourself and then you've got a team of people around you working on stuff. You know, so I had at various points in my teens, I was the singer in a couple of bands. I was running a music fanzine. I was doing community radio, as you're doing, you know, so lots of that kind of stuff. And I didn't really, I mean, I loved it at the time, but I never thought of it at the time as like, this is actually going to stand me in good stead when I go into work, and this is going to be useful stuff for employers. I didn't see it like that. I mean, I think maybe that's changed a little bit, and you know, careers advisors are a bit more hot on some of those things now as like, that's going to be beneficial. But for me, I always saw that as big a priority as my schoolwork. That's probably why I got a 2.1 at university and not a first. But like, you know, the way I often actually the way I employ people is I look for people with a CV that is, you know, B grades and 2.1s rather than A stars and firsts. But alongside those B grades and 2.1s, you've got a whole plethora of interesting extracurricular, you know, activities and experiences that kind of show someone as being someone who can manage multiple priorities. So coming back to the question, it's like, I think at times in your life when you're revising for exams, you want to put your best attention every single day onto the schoolwork. And if that means you have your best attention at 7 a.m, get up and revise at 7 a.m. But also if your best attention comes at night, then maybe it's like do some of the radio projects in the morning and then, you know, save that best attention at night for the revision.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be how it sort of plays out when that's the big focus. And then there'll probably be other times in your life where schoolwork's just kind of ticking along and really your bigger priority is like this huge radio, you know, project that you're working on, or like huge, you know, paid job thing that you're doing or something else. So I think it's like that really the important part of all of that is to like check in with yourself regularly and work out which one is the top priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That is interesting. The idea of prioritizing. And I just finished reading, Make Time. I forgot the exact name of the authors, but they are all about the daily highlight, and there's one thing you should do in that day and prioritize that one thing. And it's really similar to what you're saying right now, you know, prioritizing something which you're going to dedicate your moment of proactive attention to, because that's not all day. You only get one moment, or, you know, a couple hours of proactive attention. Also, I imagine like in like the break times of getting home and getting a snack and getting into comfortable clothes, all that, you're kind of recharging your attention to getting back into work as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think spaces and breaks are important. So, you know, I work a lot with corporate clients. So going into companies and talking to them about how they're working and applying a lot of the stuff from How to Be a Productivity Ninja in particular. One of the things I've noticed over the last couple of years with the pandemic is you've got a lot of people who they used to spend an hour in the morning driving into work or getting the tube into work, and then an hour in the evening coming back. So 2 hours a day, right? 10 hours a week of just travel to get to their jobs. And, you know, most people are saying, hey, it's lovely that I can just work from home now and I don't have that. And then some people are saying, I miss the commute, which is a strange thing. But actually, what's the commute? It's like in the morning, it's your, okay, I need to get my head around what I'm doing here. And, you know, it's a ritual that you're going through so that when you arrive at work, you feel really on it. And then at the end of the day, you know, you're stressed from everything that you've done until 5 or 6 o'clock. But that hour that you're traveling home is the time when you're decompressing and getting back into a zone where you can feel present so that you're not going to like annoy your family when you get home or whatever. So I think there's something really important that we all have around rituals. And I think, you know, having like making sure you've got the right kind of space in your life is a really important thing. So, you know, for me, often if I'm just working from home all day, I live down on the south coast in Brighton, but I'm just right by the South Downs National Park here. So like 5 minutes walk, I can just be like up into the hills, and it's really beautiful up there. And, you know, sometimes if I'm just having a day where it's just like back to back or it's just writing, then what I want to do is just leave all that behind, even if I feel pressured, and just go and have half an hour of walking in space. And it's amazing how much your brain, you know, kind of percolates and puts things in the right place when you don't think about stuff too. So you kind of have to have that space to sort of allow creative ideas to really formulate.
And seeing breaks as productive. And I feel like that's something a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. But Yeah, because people feel guilty about it, right? Yeah. And I think the other side to that is if you can reframe time away as being, you know, super important to make sure that you're at your best for the longest, right? So don't think about having a half an hour lunch break as half an hour of lost productivity. See it as a half an hour investment in your future energy, so that in the afternoon you're going to be better. So if you can see it as that's an investment that I'm making for my productivity rather than taking productivity away, you need to kind of see it as a strength rather than seeing it as a weakness and a deficit.
Yeah. I want to move to our next discussion topic of today, and that is another one of the key principles in your book, How to Be a Productivity Ninja, which is the boss and the worker mode. And this is something that when I was reading it, I was like, this makes sense, but have I never thought of this before? You'll be able to explain this way better than me. What is the idea around the boss and worker modes?
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially boss mode is, so what does a boss do? A boss is paid to define what work looks like, to define the success or otherwise of that work, to define how long that work should take. And then the worker's job is to get stuff done, right? And, you know, in all of our jobs, whatever you're doing, you are simultaneously the boss and the worker all at the same time. So if you think about what's happening when you're replying to emails, for example, part of what's in those emails is you defining the next bits of work to do. Because you're, you know, reading stuff, oh, so-and-so needs me to do this, and okay, cool, you know, and you're sort of reacting to that. But also, you might have to send information to someone, you might have to do something. So part of your emails is actually about just being the worker, like so-and-so needs that, need to do that, reply to that, I know that, so I'm helping someone out. Those are the worker tasks, but part of it is also doing the thinking. And where a lot of people's stress comes from is when you don't separate the thinking from the doing. So as you're working on something and you want to kind of deliver on a particular task, if you're also at the same time trying to define what does the end in that task look like, define some other task, thinking about something else, you know, your mind is just going to be cluttered and sort of flitting between lots of different things. So, you know, the ultimate kind of best practice here is like, if I can do as much of the thinking as possible and get the thinking out the way, then what that leaves me with is when I'm in that worker mode, I'm totally focused. So, you know, in the book, I have this whole, I mean, there's this whole kind of system in the book where I talk about the idea of a second brain and getting all of the stuff that you're working on out of your head into a place that you can do the thinking around it. And then you leave the second brain to act as your memory. And once the second brain's acting as your memory, it frees our own brain up to actually focus on, okay, what am I doing? Let's deliver on stuff and just actually get loads of those things done. So it's like, you know, it's counterintuitive because if you feel behind on stuff, then often the first instinct is like, let's just jump in and do stuff. And really you're much better off if you feel behind, if you feel stressed, to take 20 minutes, like get a pen and paper, get everything out of your head, write down everything that's going on. And then once you do that, you can see the wood from the trees. So psychologists call this distributive cognition, which basically means if you can see everything and move it around, you basically think about it better. So if you can get it all out of your head, then you're much more able to make sense of it, to prioritize it better, make better decisions. The mind's actually really bad at holding lots of information, but the mind's really amazing when it comes to strategic decision-making, creativity, you know, making agile decisions, you know, like on the hop, that kind of thing. So you want to kind of free up your brain to not be the kind of memory dump. Don't keep your to-do list in your head. It's a really bad place to keep lists. But once you've got a second brain, then that frees you up so that you can just be the worker as much as possible, but the boss as much as you need to be.
I find that separation so interesting. And when you start putting it into practice, you realize you have so much more focus for the task when you haven't got a million other things going in your brain. Yeah.
And anyone listen to this, if you've not done this before, I mean, one of the things that often shocks people is like how much stuff we are just all carrying in our heads. So, you know, I go into corporates and we work with people who are very highly paid, you know, senior managers in big companies. And one of the exercises we do with them is we literally sit them down with a pen and paper and we say, write down right now on a piece of paper, anything that is on your mind and not yet done and you need to do something about it, just go, like anything. And people go, oh, do you mean home stuff? If it's on your mind and not yet done, write it down. Do you mean home stuff and work stuff? Yeah, if it's on your mind. Do you mean like, you know, stuff that's going on in my volunteering thing that I do? Yeah, like write it down. So we just get people doing that process and people sit there for like 20 minutes. And one of the most common reactions to it is like, oh my goodness, I had no idea how much stuff was just being carried in my head. But the relief that you get from it, so anyone can just do that exercise. And you can do that whenever you're stressed. And I guarantee you it will make you feel less stressed. Most people do that, you know, once a year when they're just about to go on holiday or a week before Christmas. And, you know, the thing is, if you know that when you do that once a year, it makes you feel better. So why not do it all the time?
That's really, really, really interesting concept. I remember doing that. Obviously, that links into the CORD productivity system, which is a whole, you know, system on how to organize those things. That's really interesting. We're not going to get into that today, but yes.
Yeah, you have to buy the book to get
I'm not going to spoil it all.
Yeah, and it goes into like, I mean, that's the thing with the book is I wanted to make the book as sort of high on geeky detail as possible. So it literally talks about, here are the things to do with your email. Like, here are the apps to download. You know, the idea was to just make it as practical as possible, because I think it's, you know, it's really important to talk about the principles, but then people go, okay, so what now? You know,
yeah.
So the idea of the book is that it's super practical and you can literally just follow it step by step. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Just to move on to our final kind of topic of this interview. And by the way, I haven't warned you, but at the end of the interview, there are 5 questions which are known for being super difficult. Okay, I've done 2 recordings before this one. And in each of them, they have been very difficult to answer. So I'll make sure to leave some time for those. But briefly, I wanted to go over creating a business based around productivity and kind of your productivity journey throughout your life. So first of all, were you always a productive person?
Were I always a productive person? So
depends how you define it as well.
Yeah, it does. And that's, yeah, that's where I'm just thinking a little bit. So yes and no, and I'll explain. So I've always been, like I said to you at the beginning, so I've always been someone that will take on stuff, end up in leadership roles, have good ideas, want to do a bit more, you know, want to do more than just, you know, the academic work I was doing, or, you know, all of that. I ended up working, my first job out of university was working in student volunteering. So I'd been a volunteer myself, running some kids' holiday programs at university. And then I wound up in this job where I was coordinating volunteers to do that at the University of Birmingham, which is where I studied. And then I ended up running this national charity called Student Volunteering England, which was all about promoting that to funders, to government, so on and so forth. So I've always been, so at a very young age, I was running a charity. And so I've always been someone who has been very driven. I've always had a lot of ideas and I've always managed to, in sort of different parts of my life, find interesting and skilled people to come and work with me on stuff, you know, so to just, you know, lead or delegate or build a team or whatever. Like, I've always been good at that stuff. But what happened was after I left that charity, I went freelance. So suddenly I was just self-employed. It was just me on my own. And I was so used to working collaboratively that I could have ideas and then other people would just like spring in and start doing stuff. And suddenly when I was on my own, I realized, oh, I'm really good at being the boss, right? Like having the ideas, doing the thinking part of the stuff. I'm actually, in my own model, not that good at being the worker, like completing stuff, like getting stuff through to the end. And I realized that I just didn't have good productivity systems around that. So I had really good ideas and, you know, good processes and team sort of teams around me, good frameworks and stuff, but not really good personal systems around productivity. So that's actually how I got into creating my company, Think Productive. And we've now got offices all over the world. So UK, USA, Netherlands for Western Europe, Australia, and United Arab Emirates as well. So, you know, we've got offices all over the world doing this stuff. And ultimately, the whole company kind of springs from this sort of period in my life where I realized I wasn't very good at productivity and I had to teach myself. So I kind of, you know, because I was quite good at having the ideas, I spent a lot of time sort of reading and researching how to fix productivity for me. And once I'd fixed me, I suppose the logical next step was like, well, if I can fix me and I think naturally I'm not very good at this stuff, then I can fix anybody else. And I, you know, to be honest, when I first started putting systems in place, really starting to see improvements in how I was working, I actually thought everybody else around me already knew all this stuff, you know. And so I started talking to people. Oh, I've just started this stuff where I'm getting my email inbox to zero. And the people are like, to what? To zero? Okay. So, you know, I started talking to them about it and I realized that I was not alone in having those struggles. And actually I had something interesting to say. And it was just this, you know, very serendipitous thing where suddenly everyone that I was talking to in other, you know, sort of other assignments I was doing, other parts of my life, they were all saying, tell me more about this stuff, you know. So I just realized there was a market for it. So it was never really what I intended my life's work to be. It was very much a thing that I stumbled upon. And it was just clear as soon as I stumbled upon it that like this was something that could really make a difference for people that I was good at. I think you're always good at teaching the things that you find difficult to learn. So when you're someone who struggled to learn, you understand the struggle. And so that makes you a good teacher. Whereas if it's like, if someone who is like hyper organized taught my stuff, they wouldn't start the book with the words dear human being, as my book starts with, like from this place of like, we need to really, you know, be kind to ourselves and sort of yeah. think about our failings. They would start from a place of like, well, just, let's just get on with it. Come on. You know? So I think that it's kind of useful to be the teacher when you struggled to be the student and then mastered it, because then you understand the journey of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was kind of 10, 12 years ago. And as I say, we've got offices all around the world. We've got this this book, which has been very kind to me, How to Be a Productivity Ninja. So
I've got it here.
There you go. Which color have you got? There you go. The same one.
The green
one.
This is actually, so I found this one. I remember ages ago, I was watching lots of YouTube videos and stuff about productivity. And I went on the library yeah. website and I just searched, you know, productivity book. And this one came up.
Oh, like, cool.
Yeah, I'll give this a try, whatever. And I read it. It was great. So this one's from the library. And then I went and bought the Study Ninja.
Oh, and then you got Study Ninja as well.
Not that anyone can see. Yeah. It's a podcast. I'm holding it up to the camera.
You got a cute cat in the background there as well.
Oh, yeah. This is Nina's thing. I would say that Nina's not an extremely productive cat. Kind of spends the day just walking around doing nothing. But,
well, we learn from cats, don't we? Because I've got a cat as well. What we learn from cats is when we're flat out and we're putting too much of our value on being busy and being in that doing mode, that worker mode, and you see the cat in the sunshine just you know, having a nice little stretch, it's like, oh, space, yeah, cool, I need that too. So I think it's good, it feels good for my sort of psychic energy to have cats around. But yeah, so I mean the book obviously just did really well, and it, you know, it's been very good to me over the years, because the book really opens doors to go into more companies. So, you know, we've worked with Google and British Airways and, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and I was doing a yeah. thing a couple of weeks ago for Volkswagen, you know, so we work with, you know, really big companies, and the book it's been a huge part of that, because, you know, people read the book and then they call us, you know, so that was really the journey into kind of becoming a business that's based around productivity. And that's kind of like the sort of golden irony of it really, is that, you know, it started from my own struggle and having to fix it. Yeah
And my cat's scratching on the door. I just need to let her out.
Yeah, no, do it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm back. That was unexpected, but you know. Right before we get into the famous five questions.
Yeah, I'm nervous about this five questions now.
I'm really interested to know, what are the kind of things you're still learning now, day to day, in the world of productivity through, of course, you know, doing your, you know, teaching people in companies and yeah. stuff. What are the things you're still learning now?
Huh, okay. Let me give you a couple of things. So one thing, I'll give you one thing I'm struggling with, and then I'll give you a thing that I'm noticing everyone else is struggling with and struggling how to help them. So the thing I'm struggling with is I'm writing book 6 at the moment. So I'm writing a book which is all about kindness and leadership. So it's kind of still down the track of helping companies doing their best work. But it's a little bit of a departure for me and a different topic. And I have a lot to say on it. And I'm fully, you know, committed in belief to what the book's going to be about. And I think sometimes when something feels really important, it becomes easier to procrastinate over it. So, you know, I think this is always the case with writing. Books are always just way tougher than you think they're going to be. And it's a much bigger endeavor than you ever think it's going to be. Like, you kind of think, okay, so the job of writing a book is to sit and type out 50 or 60,000 words. And so, yeah, you can type out 50 or 60,000 words. Stephen King has a lovely quote, which is writing is rewriting. So when you've done that 50 or 60,000 words, which takes you forever, you're about a third of the way there. And then you've really got to hone it and make it better. And so I'm in the middle of that process now with this new book. And you would think, given like I'm the productivity guy, that I'd just be able to just, you know, write books with just almost zero friction and like just low effort and whatever. Every single book that I've done just bites me on the ass for months and months before it gets done. So if I look a bit tired, it's because I'm right in that mode right now. And I don't know the answer to how to make books easier, other than you can do a lot of the stuff that's in Productivity Ninja, you know, getting stuff out of your head, being organized with your ideas and stuff. And yet there's also so much of it and so much complexity with the book, and so much of it is still in your head that it's really hard to get it all out of your head all the time. So that's hard. And I suppose the other thing that I'm grappling with just like professionally is as people move away from email and move more towards Zoom calls, Microsoft Teams, Slack, you know, those kind of sort of instant message, asynchronous communication tools, is just like how to get the best kind of rules around that. Like Inbox Zero is a really great system for email, and that's, you know, step by step detailed in the book. I think what's harder to really crack is like the sort of the culture and rules of a team around when to communicate, how quickly do I need to get back to you, like how long is it okay to leave this, what do I need to say if I'm going to be away, like just all the culture and etiquette around some of those tools. I think is it's really complex, and it's really difficult to make one set of rules, because it tends to be just different in every setting. You know, it'd be different for the kind of setting you would use those tools in, as someone in one corporate, as someone in another corporate. So that becomes really tricky. And, you know, I'll be honest and say, I don't have good answers to that. And I don't think I've seen anyone else have particularly good answers to it either. My worry with it, and the reason I'm still grappling with it, is it worries me that we're sort of going it, that it, the tech is fueling more busyness rather than more space for clear thinking. And I'd love it to be really emphasizing everybody having more space for clear thinking, because I think ultimately that's how you do work that really matters, is you create space to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now for the questions.
Quick fire. These are
five questions. But I do find that quite interesting what you're saying about how technology is evolving again. You did say in the book, you know, that because it's the revised version that I've written.
Yeah.
So one of the way you wrote the book was from the perspective of, like, you know, ways you can implement it in your life straight away. So it's very technical. Well, it's not technical, but it's like very specific to technology and stuff and apps and things, which means it goes outdated quickly. And even now, I didn't think about all these things, Teams and Slack and all that. So it's really interesting to see how that works. There's so much talk about email and what's acceptable, what's an acceptable time to reply to an email and things, but there's nothing yet about all these things. And I hadn't thought about that. It's really, really interesting.
I mean,
concept.
Actually, when I did the revised version, we sat down and we sort of thought about what's changed since I wrote the original. So I wrote the original in 2013, and then the revised one in 2019 is like a 5-year anniversary thing. And we added a whole new chapter, which is called How to Stop Messing About on Your Phone. So that's not in the original book, but it's in the one that you've got. And again, you know, that was the other thing that I'd really noticed in that period, was, you know, seeing how much people's attention was actually just governed by the personal stuff on their phone. And like, you know, you're sat there trying to do something on a laptop that's like really valuable, and then you've got like Instagram and like Tinder or whatever it is like knocking at you over here, and it's like, you know, you're gonna just be distracted. So you know, that felt so like a really important thing to add. But yeah, I'd rather have a book that people can kind of get the principles even if the tech's out of date, than one that feels like too you know, big ideas but no practical implementation. I think the implementation is like, because, you know, a lot of people read books and do nothing about it. And
difficult with these books, with these productivity books. I read them, I'm like, I don't know, should I be kind of taking notes or something? Because I don't really know exactly how to take my first step.
Yeah, yeah, if you don't implement it, I call that shelf help, because it just sits on the shelf. But, you know, what's more important is actually making some changes. And like, I have no interest in someone reading my book. I have a lot of interest in someone emailing me and saying, hey, I changed this and it made my life better. That's the bit that makes it worthwhile, I think.
Yeah. This is actually probably one of the first of the five questions, which is, okay, what is your main source of motivation and what you do?
Oh, my main source of motivation. Yeah, it's funny. So, I mean, I have these conversations quite a lot because money is not my main motivation. I don't think it ever was. But with the business I've built, I don't particularly need to earn money this month to pay my bills this month, which is privilege. And I totally get that. I feel very lucky. So I think, you know, really my motivation is about making a contribution and helping people with stuff. So hence the main thing I'm working on at the moment is this new book, and I didn't have to write it. You know, Productivity Ninja still is out there in lots of bookshops and sells. So I didn't even need it to get noticed by clients for the business or anything like that. So it purely came from a couple of conversations I'd had with Penguin about, would I like to do another book and what ideas did I have? And I was like, this is the idea I really want to focus on. And they liked it. So that's how it came about. But I didn't have to pitch that. I could have just said, I'll just sit back and have a nice, you know, easy life for a year. And actually, you know, a book becomes this huge thing that's just like, it feels like a sort of ball and chain around you. So like my biggest motivation is also my biggest ball and chain right now. But I think ultimately it's about making a contribution, you know, really helping people to reframe stuff at work, be less stressed at work. And then obviously in this new book, be kinder leaders. So I'm just a big believer that we underrate kindness and we overrate aggression and what I call the business bastard. So I think there's a lot of, you know, if you watch Dragon's Den, The Apprentice, you know, all those kind of shows, the narrative is I succeed by you losing and I succeed by trampling over you to get there. And fundamentally, that is not how the world works. And it's certainly not how you build teams. So really the motivation in this book is to kind of prove everyone wrong with that stuff, I guess.
Okay. Question two, what is a quality in yourself that you've had or you've been developing along the way that you think really helped you in your journey? Can't say productivity.
Oh, wow. Okay. It took me a long time to figure this out, but I think I have a lot of ideas. I think a lot of my ideas are shit. But I think what I do very well is I organize ideas and structure ideas and make sense of stuff. So that, you know, ultimately is what helps make me good at writing books. But it's also a skill that helps me a lot when, let's say someone in the team comes and says, hey, we've got a new workshop that we want to develop. What would be the way to structure that? Like, I'm just quite good at that sort of bigger picture, putting ideas together, like structuring stuff in the right way, making sense of stuff, making stuff sound clear. And sometimes that's like, what I make sound clear is like other people's ideas. I don't think I'm the best thinker, but I think I'm good at putting structure around my thinking and structure around other people's thinking.
Okay. Question three, what is a quality in yourself that you would improve?
Oh, well, many, very many. I think I can be... So the flip side of being good at big picture and ideas, I mean, this is the story I told a minute ago about Productivity Ninja, right? It's like when you're good at big picture and ideas, you're often not that good at being the completer finisher. So detail in general is something that I struggle with a bit. I think sometimes I'm very set on my ideas. So the other opposite of having clear and strong ideas is you get set in your ways a bit and you're not open to other people's ways of doing things or different ideas. So sometimes I can be just a bit opinionated, really, or a bit stubborn. If you asked the rest of the team at Think Productive, I'm sure they'd agree with both of those and probably give you a few more.
Okay. What was the biggest mistake you made in your journey or career?
Ooh, these are tough, aren't they, these questions? What's the biggest mistake I made? So what I did with Think Productive was, like, early on, the decision I made was I'm going to bootstrap this business, which basically means start before you're that ready, which this is great advice, by the way, for if you're thinking of starting a business. And also then it comes with a really big caveat at the end, which is the mistake. So what I decided to do quite early on in the business is bootstrap, which basically means start with nothing. I started with, about £1,000 that I'd saved up and got a really crappy website together. And then we managed to get eBay as a client really early on, which really helped to get some money coming into the business and all that sort of thing. But the idea was just to plow the profits back into the business rather than seeking investment or getting a loan from the bank or anything like that. Now, the great thing about that is you can build the business slowly and organically, and you can do it your way, and you don't have bosses. So you don't have investors, you don't have the bank sort of screaming down your neck to grow at a particular speed. The downside is it's just slower. So once I'd started to see that there was traction and we were getting clients and it was starting to happen, looking back, what I wish I'd have done at that point is gone and get investment, actually, and started to really back the idea with some serious money, because we would have just been able to grow a bit quicker. And I kind of regret not doing that. But I would say that, most people, when they're thinking about starting a business, they start with how do I get investors or how do I get a loan and all that. And actually, sometimes it's better to just bootstrap, and it's a great way to get started and test the idea. So you can test a lot of ideas with very little money. But then I think once you start to see that there's some mileage in this and it's going to work, then it's really good to get it working as quickly as possible. So that's probably what I'd say is, looking back, my biggest mistake. But when I was at that point, I just had no idea about where to get investment from. I've learned more since, but I just wouldn't have known where to start. So I just didn't look. Yeah.
And plus, I imagine you don't really see, I mean, did you kind of have a vision of the company being, of the business being how it is now? Or is it kind of, because sometimes starting out, you do things in the present moment, but you don't know exactly what it's going to be like a couple of years. And you can be looking back and thinking, what was I thinking back then,
Yeah. So I mean,
what was your image for it now?
To be honest, when I first started it, from like day one of starting, I had quite a clear idea of what I wanted it to look like. And that really sort of came true about 5 or 6 years down the track. And it's very similar now. But then what happens is you get lots of other people involved who also have their vision for it. And what's nice is that all of those visions, they all sort of collide for the most part. And then they add nice details that I wouldn't have thought of around the edges. So it's ended up with being, it's a very collaborative effort. I still feel like the soul of that original business and the original vision is still there, but there's lots of new stuff too, which is lovely, actually. I did have quite a clear idea with it. And, I've sort of been involved in starting a couple of things since, but nothing that's been sort of mine. And part of the reason for that is, to be honest, even when I've had what I've thought of as quite good ideas, I've never had as clear a vision as I just had with Think Productive. So that's maybe another bit of reflection and advice. These questions are good. It's like, if you really feel like you have a clear vision for stuff, like, really cherish that, because it doesn't doesn't come along with every idea that you have. And when you have it, just like jump on it and yeah, make it happen.
It's a great piece of advice, that. Yeah.
Good questions. Yeah, I don't think I've ever really thought about that like that before.
Okay, well, this is the most tough one, I think, in my opinion. But it's the final one. So it needs it has to be a big finale to these questions. So that is, if you could go back in time, what would you tell yourself at the start of your journey or career?
Oh, blimey. What would I tell myself at the start of my journey or career? I feel like there's such a contradiction in what I want to say. So I think my immediate first thought on that is I would tell my younger self, it's all going to be okay and don't stress about it. But do you know what? Sometimes having that stress is the thing that drives you. And like in particular, what drove me a lot when I was younger was my sort of mindset coming out of university was like, I have to prove myself. I have to have a good start to my career. Mainly because financially, I came from I was a free school meals kid, came from a pretty sort of humble background in terms of, financial stability and stuff. So I just from day one was like, I need to rely on me now. And, I was terrified of being out of a job basically when I first went into the world of work. And I think that really helped me in lots of ways. I also think I made choices, early on in my career where I would sacrifice, hanging out with friends or going on holidays or whatever, mm-hmm. In order to really sort of serve my career and to build the business. And you do sort of have to do that. If you really want to have success with stuff, I think to some degree you have to make some sacrifices, but maybe what that looks like is you have one holiday a year instead of two. I would have years where I would not have a holiday, and so I think balance is important. And I don't think I was particularly good at balance in my, let's say, my 20s and early 30s. And I'm 43 now. And I think in the last maybe 10 years, I've just thought a lot more about work-life balance and, tending to the bits of my life outside of work. So it feels like a really contradictory thing. And, my podcast is called Beyond Busy. And the whole point of it is to really think about work-life balance and how does that interact with happiness and success. And I do think you can have it all to an extent, right? But I don't think you can have all of it. So, you kind of have to choose. Do you want to have an absolutely stellar career and probably a failed relationship and no friends? Or do you want to have a really good career and have some really, beautiful relationships in your life? And so I think you can sort of choose. I know a lot of very successful people who, if you looked at their home life and their personal life, they're just not that happy. And I know some really happy and contented people who work just as much as they need to. But I think it's really important to, early on in your career, it can feel so tempting to just be relentless with the work stuff. Many of those years are they're your best years for everything else too, right? And just in terms of exploring, building relationships, building family, all that stuff. And so I would just say, yes, focus on the work, but also make sure you're not kind of doing that at the expense of everything else.
That is really, really, it's been absolutely awesome talking to you today, Graham. It was great to go into the topics of the book, and having read the book, it's really interesting to kind of get kind of a deeper understanding for the topics you go over. And I hope that anyone listening who hasn't read the book or just wants kind of insight into productivity enjoyed. Graham, where can we get the book? Or any of your books, really. I'm saying the
book. Well, they're all out, and they're all on Amazon, and they're all on bookshop.org, and you can go anywhere else to get them. I just want to say great questions. I really enjoyed the conversation. If you want to just find out more about what I'm doing, though, if you go to grahamalcott.com/links, so Alcott is A-L-L-C-O-T-T, so just go to grahamalcott.com/links, and from there you can get all the books from my website, and there's my weekly email, which is called Rev Up for the Week, which goes out every Sunday.
I'll put all your links in the show notes.
Put it all. It's all there. Just grahamalcott.com/links. It's all there.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you.
And that's the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening. I love talking to Graham and would definitely recommend How to Be a Productivity Ninja. As I said, all those links are in the show notes, as well as an episode summary with the key points and timestamps if you want to recap the main bits of the conversation. By the way, I know every podcaster says this, but if you could leave a positive review on whatever app you're using, that would be brilliant. That's it for me. Have a great and productive day, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.